So welcome everyone to our teleseminar today, which is called What to Do When Your Child Just Won't Listen. My name is Kathy Gordon, and I'm a certified instructor of parenting by connection with Hand in Hand Parenting. And with me is one of our instructor candidates, Miriam Morris. We're going to hear from Miriam in a minute. We're actually, most Miriam and I are going to introduce ourselves in just a minute, but we have a lot of people who registered for the call. And so before we get to the meat of the teleseminar, I'm going to talk a bit about hand-in-hand parenting while we let people get on the call and settle in. So hand-in-hand parenting is a nonprofit organization founded by Patty Whitler in 1989. And until 2005, it was known as the Parents Leadership Institute. Our mission is to make parenting life be what you want it to be, to give you the tools and the support you need to lift the difficulties out of your life and bring you closer to your child. Our parenting approach is called Parenting by Connection, and it's an approach that really focuses our minds and our efforts on creating and maintaining and repairing a really good connection with our children. And this approach is really different from most of what's out there. What we find works best is connecting with children. A child's sense of safety, their sense of safety, which allows them to learn and to thrive, it depends on their feeling connected to us. And that's a lot of what we're going to be talking about today. So we offer six basic listening tools for promoting parent-child connection and for promoting good support for parents so that we can think well and we can be there for our kiddos. We have four parent-to-child listening tools: special time, stay listening, play listening, and setting limits, and two parent-to-parent listening tools: listening partnerships, and then setting up a parent study group or a parent resource group. You can learn about our approach and our listening tools in a myriad of ways. We have numerous free articles and success stories on the website. We have these free teleseminars, several each month. We have self-guided video classes. And then our foundational parenting tools class is called the Parenting by Connection Starter Class. When you take the starter class, you get 6 months access to the instructional videos, and you'll be part of a 6-week mentoring and support call when you're learning and practicing the tools. And that's our online starter class. There may be an instructor in your area that does an in-person starter class. And I do in-person starter classes in Los Angeles. So I'm also excited to announce that we've created a brand new class. It's similar to the starter class. We're now offering a parenting masterclass called the Parent Intensive. You get the same online access to the instructional videos, plus this class will offer you 10 weeks of support in a weekly mentoring call. So it's like you'll do the starter class and then you'll get an extra 4 weeks of support. And it's the perfect course for working on persistent behavior challenges, emotional projects, and the kind of big issues that you might not be able to tackle in a 6-week course. And we'll talk more about that course and other resources later in the call. Information about all our resources can be found on our website, www.handinhandparenting.org. And again, I'll remind you of all that toward the end of our call. So that's great. We have a lot of people here on the call. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us. So we're going to go ahead and get started. And Miriam and I want to welcome you and thank you for being here. We know how tough it can be to arrange your schedule and childcare to commit to this hour. And whether you're with us live right now or listening to the recording, we really appreciate what it took for you to be here. We appreciate your commitment to your family, and we hope that you'll come away from this call feeling uplifted and with some ideas and resources to make life go a little bit better for you and your children. We're going to start by introducing yourself, and I'll talk about what might be happening when it seems like your child won't listen to you. And we'll give you a couple of specific tools for those tough times. Miriam's going to share her experience using her tools with her own boys And then we're going to have a good chunk of time to answer some of your questions. So I'm the single adoptive mom of an 11-and-a-half-year-old boy who was born here in Los Angeles, where we currently live. He was placed with me when he was 10 days old, but I didn't discover the hand-in-hand approach parenting by connection until my son was around 5. I had been practicing nonviolent parenting, a style of unconditional, peaceful, empathetic parenting, but we were still struggling with a lot of tantrums, especially around bedtime. I actually won a consultation with our founder, Patty Whiffler, and that hour with Patty changed our bedtime, changed my relationship with my son, changed my parenting, and it just really changed our lives. And I've been a teacher of one thing or another all my adult life, so when using the parenting by connection listening tools made such a difference in my own little family, it was only natural that I'd want to share these tools with others, parents like you. Thus, I became an instructor. So, Miriam, thank you so much for being on the call with me today. Please tell us about yourself and your family.
Hi, everyone. My name is Miriam. I'm the mom of two energetic little boys who are almost 3 and 5.5 years old. And when my younger son was born, it threw our family into a tailspin. And my happy-go-lucky and easygoing little boy suddenly vanished. So I found myself, you know, lying in bed at night wondering why this was so hard and really mourning the loss of our connected family. Fortunately, I found Hand in Hand and immediately the tools resonated with me. I'll say that at first my husband was skeptical, but over the next few months as I practiced these tools, we both began to see my sweet little boy come back to me and our family return to that connected place. So my husband's been on board ever since. And I'm currently working on completing my instructor certification so that I can share this life-changing approach with other families. And I'm so happy to be here with all of you good parents today.
Hey, thanks, Miriam. I'm really happy you're here, too. So what do we mean when we say my child won't listen to me? Now, usually it means we'd like some cooperation. There's something that we'd like or that we need to happen. But just asking our child to do it or not do it, it isn't working, no matter how many times we ask or beg, reason, plead, yell, or even threaten. So at Hand in Hand Parenting by Connection, our approach is a little different. We start with the knowing that you are good, you're good parents, and that your kids are definitely good. We believe that no child wants to be uncooperative, resistant, or even aggressive. And if they do seem to be that way, it's because they've gotten stuck and they can't think. In fact, in a way, they can't even hear us, so no wonder they can't listen. So why do I say they can't think or they can't hear us? Well, I'm going to explain by telling you a little bit about how our brains work. The short story is that in order for a human being to function well, and by that I mean being able to be flexible in our thinking, being able to plan, to cooperate, reason, and so on, in order to be able to do that, all the parts of our brain need to be integrated. And in order for that to happen, our brain has to sense safety. So when children feel connected to a loving adult and feel really seen by that adult and feel safe, then they're able to easily access the thinking part of their brain, and that allows them to be cooperative and clear thinking. But when that connection breaks, and it breaks all the time, their emotional brain, what we call it's our limbic system, that part of the brain goes kind of ballistic and takes over, effectively shutting down a person's access to their prefrontal cortex, the thinking, reasoning part of our brain, and making it impossible for the child to access those higher functions. And that's why we say that an uncooperative child is a disconnected child, or an uncooperative child, they just can't think. So if we want our child to hear us and cooperate, the first thing we need to do is to connect. And one of the fastest and most effective ways to connect with our kiddos is through play. With play comes laughter and often physical contact. Now, if you think about a recent time that you really laughed with a friend, I'm sure you'll remember how connected you felt as you shared that good time. So when we use the Parenting by Connection tool of play listening, we're purposely going for connection through laughter. But we don't use tickling because that can make a child feel powerless. Instead, we choose to take the less powerful role and attempt to do something ridiculous or even goofy. Now, if any of you have tried to get your kids to clean up after themselves, you know try is the operative word, right? It can be very trying. And I'll admit, I have a tough time when my son leaves his clothes, shoes, and other items all over the place. Constantly reminding him and begging him, it makes me tight and tense. So what I found works much better is to go for the play. So, for example, when I encounter my son's clothes on the floor, this one time I decided to challenge him to shoot the clothes into the hamper while I tried to block his shot. I made a game out of it. Much laughter ensued as, of course, I was completely, you know, I was choosing to be completely inept at blocking him. And within minutes, his dirty clothes were all picked up and we'd had this great time. So I find that when I'm playful, especially in the midst of what could turn into a power struggle, we reconnect and my son will most often easily do what I'm asking. And connecting with your child through physical play can be even more effective. There may be times when we think we're connected with our child, you know, we're talking to them, they seem to be answering us or maybe refusing to answer us, but it's because they actually can't feel us. So coming in with a vigorous snuggle to, I like to snug the crabbies out of my son, or playing a chase game where we almost catch our child, but at the last minute we miss and they get away, or even a good pillow fight where our kiddo gets to pummel us. These are all delicious ways to reconnect with our child so they can really feel us. It's what I call that kind of skin-to-skin contact. Once they can feel us, they can hear us when we're asking us to do something or we're setting a limit. Miriam, I know with two boys, you use a lot of play listening in your house. I'd love for you to share a time when play really helped you reconnect with your boys and help them become even, you know, become cooperative.
Sure, Kathy. Well, it took about 5 years, but my older son finally found and discovered the power in words. So his friends at school had started name calling and it was working its way into our house. One afternoon we were on the way home from preschool and my older son asked if we could stop for ice cream and it just wasn't possible with our afternoon. I needed to get groceries home, put my younger son down for a nap. So I answered and explained this and it was met with, well, you're a boo-boo butt, which fortunately, you know, it could have been worse. But also fortunately, I'd gotten some listening time around this recently. And so the burst of name calling was something that I had already kind of started working through and I felt good about handling it in a playful manner. So my response was, oh, boy, you did it. You found my secret kiss word. Now I'm going to have to get back there to deliver them. How am I going to do that when I'm driving? And I proceeded to just rapidly try to fire them back with my hand, announcing that I had 80 million kisses headed his way. And so, you know, he said, you're a doo-doo butt face, and giggled, which was, you know, met by my next reply. No way. Did you seriously just get my next secret kiss word? No fair. Now I have to send 80 million more kisses your way. Sheesh. And we just went back and forth. My younger son got into it. It went on and on for the remaining, you know, 5 or 10 minutes home. And the name calling was left in the car as my children and I walked back into the house feeling light and connected.
That's great. Thank you, Miriam. I just love that story because for so many of us, it's like, you know, how do you set a limit around those kinds of verbal, like the S word or, you know, the name calling? And your story just really illustrated how being playful about it and getting our child to laugh and offload, you know, release that, whatever that, you know, that the tension is inside them that's driving that behavior, it's a really effective way to handle those kinds of verbal off-track behavior. And you got reconnected and you moved through the upset about the not being able to stop for ice cream. It's just really a beautiful example. So thank you for sharing that. So we mentioned that feeling disconnected happens all the time. And it's what, you know, whether we have to turn away to answer the phone or our kids are away at school or at daycare all day, disconnection and separation are a part of life. You know, it's just part of the process. And so are all the little dings and disappointments that happen throughout the day. Maybe your child's best friend wouldn't play with them, or they couldn't figure out that darn math problem. Maybe there's even bigger dings, like losing a pet. You know, your family's going through a divorce, or early medical. Maybe your child had early medical intervention, or in the case of adoption and foster care, there's the old hurts from abandonment and possibly even abuse. So all these hurts, big and little, they get stored in this emotional processing part of our brain, our limbic system. We've nicknamed this part of our brain our emotional backpack. And again, when this part of the brain is running the show, our kids can't feel us, they can't hear us, and they can't think. It really does. Just shuts off all access to the reasoning and thinking part of our brain. So fortunately, human beings have this natural built-in desire to not carry around this emotional gunk. And we look for an excuse or a pretext to offload or empty our emotional backpack. And we see a small example of this all the time when a child gets hurt on the playground. A child goes down the slide too fast, whoop, they hit, you know, maybe they hit the back of their head, or they hit their bottom too hard, or they knock their elbow. You'll notice they might not cry right away because there's this little pause where they look around to connect with their person. When they're connected with their person, then they start to cry. And over again, we see that if that child's allowed to cry, if they're not shushed or shamed, then they move through it. And they'll often go right back up on the slide and try it again because they just unloaded that momentary hurt and fear. Well, it's not too much different when our kids go off track and become resistant, whiny, or uncooperative. This is their cry for help. It can be tough to look at that off-track behavior in this way, but this really is the signal that they're feeling disconnected, hurt, scared, anxious. You know, maybe it's not just the disconnection from you having to turn away from it to answer a phone call, but it really is like the disconnection of the little hurts, the disappointments that have built up throughout the day. So they're looking to connect so that they can offload those feelings and unload their emotional backpack. And this is actually what's happening in their brains when you're seeing that off-track behavior. So when our kids get off track, you know, some may call it not listening or misbehaving. And at this point, rather than expecting our kids to listen, this is the time that we want to connect and listen to them. Now, that might seem counterintuitive, so because you might ask, well, isn't this rewarding bad behavior or being permissive, letting them get away with it? Well, that's why we have another tool called setting limits. Now, our approach to setting limits is unique, and we're probably the only approach that considers setting limits to be a listening tool. That's because when we start to set a limit, the first thing we do is to connect, and we listen or observe. Is a limit needed here? You know, often when a child seems resistant, you know what I was talking about in the beginning, if we come in and connect, perhaps with a vigorous snuggle, that might be all that connection might be all they need. Then they can think, they can do what we ask, and they go biffing along. Other times, we come in and connect, and we see that, yes, I do need to set a limit here in order to stop the irrational behavior, because we realize our child can't think, and they really are signaling for help. So when we set a limit, we bring the limit to our child. That means we move in close, get down on their eye level, make gentle physical contact, and perhaps even stop their body from climbing on the table or hitting the dog or a sibling. So while we're saying no to the off-track behavior and helping our child stop by bringing the limit to them, we're saying yes to our attention, warmth, and love. So we come in and say, no, sweetie, you know, I can't let you hit the dog, and gently put your hand on their hand. We're saying no to the behavior when we set a limit, and then we listen with this big yes. Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm right here to listen to you. Yes, I'm right here to help you with your feelings. So our tool of setting limits is a three-step process. We listen, set a limit, and then listen. And because this limit may be exactly the pretext our child is seeking when they go off track and they're signaling for help, there are going to be some feelings that are going to come up. If there's no, if there's not a lot of tension or disappointment in their emotional backpack, again, we come in, we connect with them, we say, no, sweetie, I can't let you do this. They look at us, they make eye contact, they nod, and they're able to do what we ask, and they, again, they go bipping along. But if they're this limit, if this off-track behavior is their signal, help, I'm feeling disconnected, I'm feeling alone here, I'm, you know, I've got a lot of gunk in my emotional backpack here, then when we come in and we set a limit, then there are going to be a lot of big feelings. And then we listen to them through those big feelings, and they come out the other side, our happy, cooperative child who now, again, has access to that thinking part of their brain. So with my son, while I'm setting a limit or an expectation that it's time to do his schoolwork, now my son's had some learning challenges, so he's got a lot of anxiety around reading and writing. So I often find that when I'm setting a limit or I'm holding the expectation, yes, sweetie, you can do this, that he uses that as an opportunity to offload that anxiety. So then I have to take a deep breath, but I try to recognize that he's not just refusing to do the schoolwork, that there is some anxiety or tension that's driving his off-track behavior. And I set the limit and listen to his feelings. Then he's able to unload those feelings and get back to being his happy, cooperative self. Miriam, would you share a time when you used our listen, limit, listen approach?
Sure, Kathy. Recently, we hosted my sister's family for 10 days, and in our modest-sized house, that meant we had close quarters for four children and who are all under seven and four adults. So my kids had offered up their bunk bed to their cousins, and our family was camping out on air mattresses in one room. My older son had been off track all afternoon, and my attempts to playfully engage him and reconnect in that way just weren't getting me anywhere. So at dinner that night, I had set the table with assorted dishes, and he started whining and complaining that he wanted the one with the bright colors and not the plain orange one. So I listened to his complaint. I acknowledged it. You know, sweetie, I hear you. You wish you had the colored one. You want a different choice. And then I set a limit, and I calmly told him, sweetie, these are the plates we're going to use tonight, and tomorrow you can choose your own. And by setting this limit, he was able to just really have a good cry and offload much of that tension that had been building that day. And he cried in my loving arms as I listened and heard that it wasn't fair that his cousins had the other plates. And, you know, then simply just gave him my warm attention, saying, I'm sorry, it's hard. You're my special boy, and I'm right here. And after this good cry, he was able to join us at dinner and be more playful and relaxed with the rest of the family. And, you know, we enjoyed an easy transition after dinner to bedtime, too.
Great. Thanks. Thank you, Miriam. It's, you know, that's a perfect example of why we have four different listening tools. Because you were trying to be playful, you were trying to play listen, and it wasn't, you know, he had enough gunk in his emotional backpack that it actually required that you set a limit and then stay listen, which is, again, you know, one of our parent-to-child listening tools. That required that coming in, setting a limit, and stay listening to his feelings, and then you got your happy, cooperative little boy on the other side of that. So thank you so much for sharing that. We'd love to take some questions from you. That's kind of the bulk of our presentation, really talking about those two tools, play listening and setting limits. I'm sure as you ask your questions, we'll get a chance to talk about our other tools, special time, and I did just mention stay listening. And I'll just also put a plug in here for listening partnerships. In the first anecdote that Miriam told, she talked about how she had noticed that her son was starting to do some name calling. So she had taken that to her listening partner and been able to kind of rant and rave and offload her own tension around the name calling with her listening partner. So often for with using all of these tools, we have to take our stuff, you know, we get stuff gunked up on our emotional backpack, and so we take our stuff to a partner who's just going to listen to us without interruption, without trying to fix us, just holding the thought that we're good and we're going to figure it out, and we get to offload and empty our emotional backpack so that we can come back and be more relaxed, flexible, thinking well, more playful, more patient. We often find that in a lot of these situations that us getting regular listening time really supports us in doing this work with our kids. So before we take our questions, take some of your questions, I just want to do a little recap. Because our brains need to feel safe and connected in order to be able to access the higher thinking reasoning part of our brain, our cortex, the parenting by connection approach sees an uncooperative child as a disconnected, scared child who's gone off track because they can't think. When we provide connection through play and by bringing a limit to them and then listening to their feelings, their emotional poop, if you will, if you think of, you know, emptying this backpack as sort of an emotional poop, like our kids, you know, they have to poop and pee. If we think of this emotional offloading as the same sort of in the same context of they're having an emotional poop, when we listen to them, they're able to empty their emotional backpack and really feel our connection and safety and then access the thinking part of our brain. In other words, they return to their natural, light, happy, cooperative self. So now we'd love to take your questions. We've left a good about 25 minutes or so. If you have a question, you can raise your hand by pressing *2. And in the interest of time, I'm going to ask if you could be as brief in your explanation as this, your situation or your question as possible, so that we can get to lots of questions. Because we've got a lot of people on the call, so if you can be really brief in your explanation of the situation, that would support everybody. So, great. So Kevin Tate is, I don't know if that's just Kevin.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Hi. Great. So
I have a little bit of a unique situation. My daughter was kidnapped by her mother from the East Coast out to California. When she comes to visit me, her mother has told her that her father is going to leave her and never come back. Mm. Despite my best efforts to console my daughter and tell her that, you know, daddy is always going to be here, she gets extremely emotional at any turn of the step. I mean, I cannot go to the restroom without her just literally flipping out of, you know, where's my daddy? Where's my daddy? Even if I just tell her, honey, I'm just going to the restroom real quick. You know, she will just lose it. And what can I do? I mean, this is a pure case of parental alienation. I've tried to talk to people about getting some help about that. If you can help me from that respect of like, what can I do for my little daughter to help her feel that, you know, that's not happening. One parent saying one, daddy's going to leave forever, and then the other one, I'm here for her.
Okay. Yeah, Kevin, I'm really, really sorry that you and your daughter are both going through this. And the parenting by connection approach, our listening tools, they really are an attachment-based, trauma-informed approach. So, there's a couple of things that I would recommend. We didn't talk about the tool special time, but special time is when we give our child undivided attention for a finite amount of time. And this is a time when your daughter takes the lead. She's the more powerful. You know, she gets to choose what to do within, you know, safety and financial and time constraints. You know, if you're going to give 10 or 15 minutes of special time, there's not going to be time to, you know, go to Disney World. But so giving your daughter a regular special time, even several times a day, is going to increase your connection and your sense of safety. And there is a, if you look on our website for, there's a playback to a teleseminar that we did on emotional projects, because what you have on your hands is what we call an emotional project, meaning it just keeps coming up over and over again, this feeling of, this fear of being left. And no, and it's a, it's stuck in, again, in the emotional processing center where there's no access to language. So no amount of talking is going to, you know, is really going to persuade that fear center that the feeling is not true, because the feeling feels true and the feeling ignites the flight response that your daughter's experiencing. So giving her, so to go back to, on the website, the teleseminar, if you do a search for, limits just aren't enough, it tells you how you can support your daughter in emotional project. And, I won't go into all of it here, but the first step is for you to get some listening time, for you to be able to offload your own fears and angers about this situation. And then regular special time with your daughter, like two or three times a day. Now, the key to special time is that you will set a timer. And that timer is perhaps going to stimulate that feeling. I know for my son who was adopted, when the timer would go off, it would stimulate his feelings of being abandoned, because the end of something is very, very hard for anybody who has those fears of being abandoned. But the beautiful thing about special time is if you do 10 minutes of special time with your daughter where you follow her lead, you give her your undivided attention, you don't answer the phone, you don't even pick up that towel over there on the floor that is screaming to be picked up. You take the less powerful role, when the timer goes off, you have left another 20 minutes or so to listen to her feelings. This is going to require rather than talking to her about it, it's going to require a lot of setting little limits about, like Miriam gave the great example of her son being upset about the dishes. And Miriam, in her wisdom, had the sense that this is not just about the dishes. This is about, you know, all the chaos and the lack of connection that's been happening because we have so many family members here. Her son was using the dishes as a pretext. So let's say your daughter wants the red cup and you've given her the blue cup for her juice and she wants the red cup. So you just setting a little limit about, oh, sweetie, we're going to use the red cup today. Even though it would be really easy for you to swap out the cups, you know that she's getting upset about the cups as a pretext. This is the way our brains work. It's not conscious. It's not manipulative. It's not something we consciously choose. It's something that our limbic system looks for a reason to offload this fear. And so you setting a limit around the color of the cup, like, oh, sweetie, we're just going to use the blue cup today, gives her a chance to have a really good hard cry that has nothing to do with you leaving, nothing to do with you going to the bathroom, but she's still getting a chance to release and offload some of the stuff that's stuck in her, the emotional processing part of her brain. There's a great article on our website called Putting Limits on Fear, which is exactly the kind of thing that you're dealing with. Now, there was not the degree of fear stuck in that the little girl's in the story in her limbic system. So it really only required her mom setting this limit once before she was able to have a good hard cry and offload. For your daughter, there's going to be lots of good hard cries. But the thing to notice is, how is she with you in between the hard cries? And that's right. How you'll know you're on the right track. If there's more lightness in between the hard cries, then you'll know you're on the right track with this. Does that, some of that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Great. And I think the issue I'm having is that she won't listen to other people, but she will listen to me. So with her interaction with me in between the large cries is great and incredible. She's a daddy's girl. She wants to be with daddy. But when it comes to other people as well, kind of getting into the mix, she won't listen to them. That might be a second question. So sorry.
Yeah. Well, some of that is, then surrounding her with, if you can, with people that will also listen to her feelings, she's using them and their limit setting, again, as a pretext to offload the fear that she's feeling. So, and you, again, working on little limits at home where, as I say, it'd be easy to swap out the cups, but you decide that you're going to give her this opportunity to have a good hard cry, then she may start to be easier with other people, other people that need to care for her. So, if you, any more questions about this, feel free to contact me through the Hand in Hand website, because as I say, you've got a big emotional project there, and I'm sorry you're going through it. So thank you so much for being on the call, Kevin. And I'm going to take a call from somebody in Arizona.
Yeah, I have a question. At what point, my children are five, I have two, five, five-year-old twin boys, and I've got one that's very, he cries emotional, and then I've got one that's very anger emotional. So when he gets very upset, he lashes out in anger, whether it's laying on the ground, throwing a tantrum, throwing things, pushing things over. He gets very, very physical. And I've been actually doing this kind of a concept more than I realized, because yesterday he got very upset because he left his lunchbox at school. So I got down on his level. I let him know that I was here, that I'm sorry that he left his lunchbox, that I would be upset if I left my lunchbox, but that we could not go back and get it, that he would be able to get it tomorrow. And that he cried and he got upset, and then I held him. But at what point and at what age developmentally do we expect them to be able to communicate with us what it is that they're really upset about? Because there are some days that leaving the lunchbox would have been no big deal. But for whatever reason, it was a huge deal yesterday. So obviously there was other stuff that was going on. But it's not like he ever was able to tell me anything. So it's not like I feel like I can help him through whatever he might have been going through.
Yes. So it's a great question. Is this Rachel?
Yes.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. Great. It's a great question, Rachel. And sometimes people will ask me when the tantrums will stop, and I say, well, let's see, my dad is 84, and his sort of started to slow down in his 70s. But still, when he gets anxious about something, I see that he loses the capacity. He just gets, he gets sort of irrationally angry, and he loses the capacity to communicate. So I'm sure for all of us as adults, how many of us, start to lose it with our children? So the way the brain functions is that when we get, when there's all this stuff in our emotional backpack, it cuts off our access to our reasoning part of our brain, where also there are access to language. The good news is that the more that we listen to our children and the more we get listening time ourselves, the more emotional resiliency we have. The more that we are able to weather, you know, the disappointments of life. And, you know, Patty, her boys are, she started using the idea of listening to her boys when they were very young, and they're now in their late 30s, early 40s. And they will still come to her to get listening time, but now they can specifically ask for it, right?
Okay.
They don't need to go off track the way our kids do, or sometimes our partners do, and sometimes we do, you know, we go off track, and then I know enough to like, oh, I better go get some listening time because I'm having no patience with my son. So, but our little ones don't know enough to say, oh, mom, I need some listening time. But one thing they often do is they will ask for special time. If you start a practice of special time, then you might find that, you know, you pick your child up from school and they seem disgruntled or unhappy and they'll say, you know, mom, can I have special time? I need some special time. But the research that shows, and so John Gottman wrote a book called Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. And he did this research where he, with anecdotal research, where he observed families in three different parenting styles, the power over authoritative, I get those two mixed, confused, I think authoritative, authoritarian, well, whatever, you know, the punishment style, the permissive style, and then the, what he called the emotional coaching style, where you listen to your child's feelings. And when he looked at these children, he started watching them when they were, you know, little ones, just learning to walk. And when he looked at them as adolescents and in their early 20s, what he discovered was that the children of the families who were emotionally coached had more emotional resiliency. First of all, they had better physical health. They had healthier relationships. They did better academically. And it's not that they didn't fail or get disappointed. They did. That's life. But they had more emotional resiliency to move through those failures and move through those disappointments. But the beautiful thing about this approach is, rather than being an ages and stages kind of approach, we understand how the brain works. So whether a child is, you know, 3 or 13, when there's a lot of emotional tension that builds up in the brain, they're going to go off track. And then we can view that as like, oh, this is a signal for help. I can step in here, I can stop the irrational behavior, or I can, you know, just listen to the upset, and they will move through it, and they'll empty their emotional backpack, and they come out the other side lighter, happier, more able to think. Does that help answer your question?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank
Great.
You.
Awesome. Yeah. Great. So, let's see, we have somebody from Salt Lake City.
Yes. Hi, this is Christy.
Hey, Christy.
So I have a 6.5, almost 7-year-old boy, and he goes from happily playing calm, and then something will happen, and it's like he just starts screaming or throwing things, and it's usually in regards to a sibling or a friend or somebody taking something from him or, you know, he not playing the way he wants, and he just reacts very extremely, and I'm struggling on teaching him how to control himself in those situations. Like if I'm right there, I can step in, but if he's, you know, across the yard or at school or whatever, I'm trying to help him do it for himself.
So, and so you're wondering, so what your question is,
how do I help him to regulate that when I'm not right there.
Yeah.
To help him to calm himself down so he doesn't go straight to hitting or screaming.
Right, right. So, though, I think it's great follow-up. Your question's a great follow-up to Rachel's question about, you know, at what age did children start having the capacity to tell us when they're upset rather than you know, getting upset and going really off track with their behaviors. And I think the answer to your question, Christy, is that the more that you are using these tools at home, and rather than encouraging him to tamp down his feelings, because there is a misunderstanding of the brain science that thinks of the brain as that we have the capacity to self-regulate. We always look first to co-regulate. So if you're giving your son regular special time where that you're taking the less powerful role so that he feels more powerful, if you're doing a lot of rough physical play with him, again, taking the less powerful role, and if at home, if rather than asking him to tamp down his feelings, if you move in and set a limit, like not set a limit on how he's feeling and how he's expressing those feelings, unless it's a safety limit where you need to keep him from hitting someone or taking a toy away, you know, that kind of thing. But if you step in and listen to his feelings and he gets a chance to offload them, then you'll find that you are actually creating neural pathways in the brain so that he has this experience of, you know, so if you think of it like in that moment of upset, what the brain is saying is danger, danger, danger. I'm in fight, flight. I'm not sure I'm going to, it's like being in the throes of an emotional bad dream or even a nightmare. I'm not sure I'm going to make it. I'm all alone here. There's nobody here for me. That's what's actually happening in our child's experience when they're in the throes of that tantrum. Especially when it's a tantrum with big physical expression. Okay. So when we come in close, and they can feel us by, you know, maybe we, you know, put our arm on their arm, or we're gently holding them. We're sitting to the side of them and gently holding them. And you might think of it as kind of a time in. And you are, you know, you listen to them move all the way through those feelings. It actually creates the neural pathways in the brain that I can experience disappointment and I can live through it, and there was somebody here for me. It's actually healing to the brain. And that's what creates the emotional resiliency that then our children go out in the world and they have more capacity to weather disappointments. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, I understand. And I need to probably do it more at home. My concern is when I'm not there to be that person for him and he doesn't have that person to offload to.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At school or at a friend's house or something. And maybe it's just more practice at home so it doesn't happen as much in that environment. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. If he gets more opportunity to offload the fear that he's feeling, because the way we look at a child who's got like big physical, you know, like a lot of thrashing, like that's a lot of fear. And if we can be there for them while they're moving through that fear, and oftentimes, you know, they'll move through the fear and they'll get to the hurt that's underneath the fear. you know, if we do that with our kids more often at home, they have much more resiliency out in the world. They don't get, you could use the word re-stimulated. They don't get re-stimulated as much. We're building their confidence. We're building their sense of self, really, when we're listening to them move all the way through those feelings at home.
Yeah. Okay, that helps.
So, great, great, yeah. Thanks, Christy. So, Karen from Palo Alto. Oh, hang on, Karen. Let me unmute you. Okay, there you go. Karen.
Hello?
Hey. Hi, Karen. You're on.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks. So I've been following the on-demand parenting for some time. I got great success, except for the setting limit thing, which I've never been able to get work. So what happened is...
Hang on, Karen. Let me just turn down the volume a little bit because it's really muffled. So say it again. I heard you say something about some success.
Yeah, so I've been using handyman tools for a few years, and I got really good outcome, actually. But there's one thing, which is this the setting limit, which I never got successful. And the reason is, so my daughter has kind of the same big emotional upsets as the lady before was saying. Any time I try to set a limit, and no matter how gentle I try to set it, it just turned immediately into a power struggle, and there's no way out of it. And what is worse is that it basically creates a, how can I say, a pattern. So anytime we get in the same situation, she would spike up again right away with a power struggle, even before I set the limit. So I don't know how to get out of this loop.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question, Karen. And what I would say is that I have a son who experiences no much the same way. No, just, my theory is that because his very first transition into the world was one of, you know, the death of his biological mother. She didn't really die, but, you know, that's how it felt neurologically to him. You know, every limit just it re-stimulates that feeling of being left, or just an insurmountable fear for him. So I have found that playfully setting limits with my son works much, much better than trying to bring the limit to him. And I do that. I would I can bring a limit to him. I can hold an expectation to him. But if it starts to be into a power struggle, then and particularly if he starts to become physical, then I usually try to shift it into play listening. And I'll give you a little quick example. I talked about his anxiety around learning and schoolwork, and so we've homeschooled for the last 5 years, and so we were working on topic sentences, main idea sentences, and there was these four paragraphs, and for several days he'd been saying, I can't, it's too much on the page, and I was doing sort of what I would call a workaround, like for several days I'd been like, okay, well, if you can't do that, then here, this is the same lesson, but there's less words on the page or whatever. And I got some listening time around it. And that's one thing, Karen, it would be great for you to get some listening time around this, what it feels like a pattern of power struggles to you. What I realized was that I don't know what my son sees on the page, but I do know that he's got some feelings around it. And so I decided, after I'd gotten some good listening time around it, I decided that I was going to hold a limit. And at first he got really angry. I said, sweetie, I know you can do this. Holding that expectation. He got really angry. And so he whipped off, I don't know if he had his shirt off or if he whipped it off, but he started to try to whip me with his shirt. I grabbed a blanket and helped, and he was first he was really mad. And he was really trying to hit me. But I was light about it because, again, I had gotten listening time. So I was kind of holding the blanket up, and now he's trying to hit me over the blanket and under the blanket. And very soon it shifted, and he started giggling. Now I'm grabbing the shirt with the blanket and pulling him towards me. We're knocking into each other. We're falling on the floor. He started bopping me with pillows. It turned into kind of a pillow fight. It was this great laughter and physical connection for about 10 minutes. And then he said, can we go play catch, which is what he likes to do for special time. Remember, he's 11 and a half. So I said, sure, we can play catch for 5 minutes. So I set the timer. We played catch for 5 minutes. He came in, he sat down, and he did the four paragraphs, read the four paragraphs without one complaint, not one word about I can't or that's too many letters on the page. It blew my mind away that something that I was thinking like, oh, what's the next kind of therapy that I have to do for, you know, that just listening to, you know, just holding the expectation and then play listening. So it helped move it out of a power struggle into play. It was amazing to me how it like helped him offload whatever the feelings he had about that page, and came in and he was able to sit down and do it just like easy peasy. So that's what I would recommend, like looking for ways with your daughter to be more playful. The other thing I would recommend is that you up the special time. If you're doing more special time where she is taking the more powerful role, you may see a decrease in power struggles. It's that feeling of powerlessness in our kids that really drives those power struggles. So if we're doing more special time throughout the day, then there's more possibility that we're going to have less power struggles. Does that help? Does that make sense?
I guess. Yeah. Good try. Thank you.
Great. Awesome. So I see it's 11:58. I'm going to wrap up the call, but I see there's two more people with their hands raised. So if you'd like to hang on the call after I do the little wrap up, and if people need to go, they can go, and then we can answer your two questions. I'd be happy to do that. So great. Okay. So, here's our little wrap up. So we hope we've given you some ideas that can help you connect with your kiddos so that they can think well and be their natural, light, happy, cooperative selves. We know this is just an hour call and that these wonderful tools take practice, and it also takes you being supported. So we'd love to continue to work with you and support you. I mentioned that we're offering a new parent masterclass, the class designed with extra support to help you master tough behaviors and emotional projects. I'll be one of the four instructors leading the parent intensive, and I'm just really excited I'm going to get an opportunity to support parents for a full 10 weeks rather than the 6 weeks in the starter class. So when you receive the playback for this call, there'll be a link to find out more about the Parent Intensive and all our wonderful materials and resources, or you can connect with me directly through the Hand in Hand website or my Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Kathy Gordon, and that's Kathy with a K, and it's G-O-R-D-O-N. In addition to leading the online Parent Intensive and Parenting by Connection Starter class, I also work with parents privately, and I teach classes and workshops locally in LA. And as you can tell, I'm passionate about supporting parents like you and helping you create more connection, cooperation, and fun in your homes. And Miriam, I know you're soon going to be a certified instructor, so parents can look forward to connecting with you through our website and locally in Los Angeles. We offer so many resources, so please do explore our website. There's two more free teleseminars offered just this month and many more in the future. On Sunday, August 23rd at 6 p.m., the topic is supporting your kids as they head back to school. On August 31st at 6:30 p.m., instructor Julie Johnson is offering a Q&A for parents of preteens. And if you go to our website and click on the calendar icon on that page to the right, you'll see a link for free parenting calls. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we depend on your donation to provide free services like this parenting call, our free parent Yahoo discussion group, and scholarships for classes and instructor training. It's easy to donate, and any amount helps. Just click on the donate button on the website and give what you can. Oh, and I should mention, too, that Patty Whistler, we have these wonderful booklets, but Patty Whistler is actually writing a Parenting by Connection book, and we're so excited about this. September 16th, I think, maybe it's the 14th, we're going to have a we're kicking off a fundraising campaign. We're taking pre-orders for the book, and I'll actually be offering a free 10 to 15 minute one question private consultation for anybody who pre-orders. And that's just our big exciting news, that how you can support Parenting by Connection by pre-ordering your book. And together we can support parents everywhere. And with that, we'll wrap up the call, except for those couple of people who still have questions. If you want to stay on the line. And thank you, Miriam, for taking a time away from your family and your work to join me. I'm sure our listeners really appreciated hearing about your journey, and we all look forward to you soon becoming a certified instructor.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you to everyone who was on the call.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed our teleseminar. It's been wonderful to have you here with us. We really appreciate your leadership in your families and your commitment to your children or any of the children with whom you may work. We'd love for you to keep in touch and let us know how it's going. And bye-bye to anybody who has to leave. And I'm going to actually just pause for a couple of seconds, again, just to help with the recording, and then I'll take the last two questions. So, somebody from Bangalore?
Hi.
George? Hi.
Yes, hi. Okay, so can I go ahead with my question?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have a 3.5-year-old daughter. And I noticed that she used to start getting aggressive when other kids refused to cooperate with her. So she used to scream and hit them even. So what I did was I reduced the time that she spent with outdoor play, and I started giving her a lot of special time. And now she refuses to go play with other kids, and she wants to play more with me. So I was wondering, is there something called too much of special time? How do I pull back, and how do I get her to socialize more with her peers?
Yeah. You know, Miriam, have you had that happen at all with your boys, where they would rather play with you than putting you on the spot here, but I...
My older son went through a period where he was actually very aggressive with other children. And I found that, well, first of all, I think just creating opportunities where you're there and you're getting very playfully engaged with more than, you know, just your child. So not necessarily expecting her to be able to go off and play with the child independently, but getting in there and having them gang up against you in some type of activity. This is what worked really well for me in helping my son kind of forge friendships, was just getting really involved and playful taking on that role of the buffoon in their play, so that they're laughing and they're offloading all those tensions. But they're also forming that, you know, collaboration against me. That was something that really helped. And then just understanding that with, you know, that type of aggression, you need to stay very close so that you can bring that limit if you be right then and there in a very non-judgmental and calm manner, so that you can support her as she learns, you know, how to be in that space in a safe way. So,
yeah, it's great. It's great, Miriam. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. So first of all, I think it's great that you saw what was kind of an unworkable situation for your child, and so, you know, you gave them more special time in order to, you know, to to increase their sense of safety and connection. And then, so in answer to your question, there's, I don't believe there's a such thing as too much special time, but what Miriam was saying is exactly right, that expecting your child to go off and play by themselves, you know, it does seem to be causing some anxiety in them. So exactly what Miriam said, that you, that when there's a opportunity to play with other children, that you get involved in the play. And the idea of having the kids gang up on you so that she feels an alliance with the other children ganging up on you could be really helpful. I don't know what article this is, but it's a play listening game that I've heard Patty, refer to over and over again, that when a child is afraid of something, that you, you know, that you say, you know, we're just, like, if there's a group of children, you might say, you know, we're just going to go like a couple of steps closer, and then we're going to run away. And now we're just going to go a couple of steps closer. Oh, now we're going to run away. You know, so that she's laughing about even the process of entering into, you know, getting close to these children. So you make a game out of that, you know, you can use that sort of thing when a child has, you know, anxiety about going to their swimming lesson, or, you know, it's a kind of a stop and go game where you just take a couple of steps towards whatever it is that's causing them anxiety, and then you run away from it. And so they're laughing. And that might also help with offloading some of the anxiety about entering into a group. You know, I still find it, you know, anxiety provoking as an adult to enter a group of people that are already engaged. So I think, you know, those two ideas can really help. And you might, the only other thing I might suggest is that, you know, in your special time, or just in your play at home, that you make, do more rough and tumble play, where she gets to bowl you over. Like, all it takes is for her just to touch you and you fall backwards if you feel physically comfortable doing that sort of thing. You know, building a child's physical confidence, their confidence in their body can help with building their emotional confidence as well. Yeah?
Okay.
Great. Okay. Great. Yep. So.
Sounds helpful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good. And lastly, we have somebody from Twin Cities, Missouri.
Hello.
Hi. Yes.
Hi.
You're unmuted.
Okay. So thank you. I have two boys. I have a 13-year-old and who's with me half the time, and I actually have a 5-year-old who's with me all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And at 2 years old, we finally figured out why nobody was sleeping. My now just turned 5-year-old has sensory processing disorder and mm-hmm. restless legs. And I don't know if you know anything about those, but if you've ever read the Raising Your Spirited Child, that's my child.
Mm-hmm.
And he absorbs everything, highly intuitive, highly intense, highly perceptive, highly everything, and very transitions are very difficult on every level.
Yeah.
And even though his older brother, to a degree, has already not, he's similar, but slightly less degree, and so he internally understands all of this. No one else in the family besides myself is responding in a way that my 5-year-old needs. I'm a single mom, but dad's still actively involved, and other siblings and everybody. So all of a sudden we're quiet, calm, then we got a flux of new energy and people involved, and then the flux is gone, and just in that transition creates this big trauma and turmoil just internally that creates kind of these big, huge, out of sync behaviors. Okay.
Right. Right.
And,
yeah.
People are wanting to provoke him because makes him, I'm constantly going, no. When he's already at this heightened level, just poking at him is like poking a lion with a stick in a cage, and then he pops, you know, and then we have these major, huge things. And, of course, then everybody's mad at him because it's the kind of not fun behaviors. And the idea is that you have this power over things should bubble. And so I'm wondering a couple fold is what to do. I mean, it seems easier for me to advocate his swim teacher, you know, swim lessons and some other in professional environment than it is in our own home to help my own child. And secondary to that, you're talking about your 11-year-old and wanting to hit you and all that. And part of me kind of goes, he's so intense and he's a boy and he's going to be bigger than me. And, you know, is there going to be a point in time where, because in those moments, and I can already see it, he's totally hijacked. He's just completely hijacked.
Yeah.
He feels shame afterwards. He feels lesser than, because he, in his view and everyone else's view, acts in ways that other people aren't acting when they have these big feelings. Now, I'd have to say he's more in touch with his feelings than anyone else is, but, you know.
Yeah.
So my question is twofold. How do I help him or help others help when they just don't want to see, you know, I'm crazy for thinking this, by the way. Although his older brother does understand it, and each time we go back, and part of what happens too, I think, is when his older brother comes back, he has to dump his backpack because at the other home, they're the power over.
Yeah.
So he's got to unload, and then of course he comes and kicks the dog, his brother. And, you know, there's this kind of, for the first several days, where it's very combative kind of first several days, and it's just ping-ponging off each other. We finally settle down. Everything feels great and connected, and then boom, he's gone. And we go through this whole up and down roller coaster of transition. So I just didn't know if you had any suggestions.
Tell me your name.
My name is Deanna.
Deanna. Great. Deanna.
Yeah. Deanna with a B.
Oh, with a B as in boy?
D as in dog. Deanna.
D as in dog. Okay. Right. Deanna. Okay. So, I'm so glad you're here, and I'm sorry it's, you know, you got so many different elements to try to navigate here. So the first thing I would suggest is really that you get some support in terms of listening partnerships. It's just way too much for one person to handle emotionally by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, I know I will tell you that, that because of using these tools and some other therapies that we've done for my son, the aggression is almost completely gone, because of listening to him and listening to his anxiety and being playful with him. But I could not have used these tools all these last 6 years without getting regular listening time. I mean, I have listening partners in probably just about every time zone. And even if I could just escape to the bathroom and just call and get somebody's voicemail for 2 minutes of being able to offload how hard it is, then being able to come back and be with my son. So that's the first thing. So, and then the second thing I would there's a instructor in Denver by the name of Kristen Volk, who has a similar situation to you. She has two children, one who's got some neurological challenges, and then the daughter is neurotypical, and it's a lot of the same situation where the two of them go to their fathers. And I know, so she would be a great resource for you, Kristen Volk. And I know she does a weekly telephone support call. She also leads the Parenting by Connection Starter class. She's also going to lead one of the times of the parent intensive. Because one of the things that she has said is that when her kids come home, you know, she has to be very strategic about when they come back from dad's. She has nothing planned, you know, no activities. She calls it, you know, sort of collecting her children, like bringing them in. So one of the things you might need to do is do special time with the child who's with you, you know, with that son before the other child comes home, so that then you can do special time with him. So that the special time is part, special time is the building block that builds the connection in your family and that builds the safety in your family. And you know, and you're, so you're collecting the son that comes home and you're providing him with a sense of safety so that he doesn't have to kick the dog perhaps as much, you know. The other, you know, and, you know, the issue of like other people in your child's life is just an ongoing, you know, I started shadowing my son when he was 4 and a half. And we homeschooled for 5 years so that I was pretty much throughout by his side. And I, you know, and also homeschooling allowed me to choose teachers that, you know, that understood how to be in relationship with him and that he learns through calm teaching, you know, rather than through power over. And then as his emotional resiliency improved and his sensory and neurological issues became healed through the different therapies that we were doing, you know, then I could step back a little bit by little bit by little bit. However, he's about to go into a traditional middle school. And that could be some rough waters that we're going to have to, you know, to encounter with teachers who have 40 kids in a classroom, and so they have a classroom management style that could send my son just right down the tube. So my plan is, first of all, for me to get lots of listening time, and also for me to you know, to make sure we do special time before he goes to school and special time right after school, and to minimize the activities that we do in the evening. So, but, you know, other than doing the best you can to educate people around you, surround your child with people that do get him and do understand him, you know, it is an ongoing just part of the journey that we need to get lots of support and listening time around so that we can offload our feelings so that we have more capacity and patience to be with our kids. I know that's probably not as concrete or specific or enough, but I hope that, you know, just the, you know, the, because it is ongoing, the support that you need, excuse me, is ongoing. Does that make sense or?
It does. And I think, for me, what I'm just hearing all this, where my expectation, and I'm trying to get my expectations to be appropriate because then I don't trigger, you know, or I don't feel like, oh, what am I? So is it unrealistic of an expectation? I'm kind of answering my own question just listening to you. For me to expect, and my 13-year-old, by the way, has had to come home and dump prior to his brother ever being here. It was enormously difficult when he was younger. It's still difficult. It just has taken a different form. And he needs to come home and just be, and it's like he has to, when he was little, if I would turn on a light switch and he wanted to turn in that light switch, he would have a huge meltdown. And even if I were to offer him to turn it back on and off and let him do it, nope, it had to be the one that was just passed. So it wasn't about the light switch. He needed it to trigger out of something he couldn't control so he could fall apart. And
yeah.
So we went through all of that with his, you know, and now my little one is just, they're like two peas in a pod. But so is it,
I guess maybe I'm sitting here going, he's 13 years old. He's been through all of this. Why is he picking on his brother? He knows he's lost these shoes. And is that kind of unrealistic because he still has his own garbage and he's not in his head? He's just in his emotional backpack anyways. And I just need to take that off his back.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I just did plan that this is just our life. Yeah. I mean, this is just the way we do life. And because then if I shift that, then I don't have to feel like, if I can, okay. And then my next one is the fear-based question is more, oh my gosh, especially my little one, because he's really intense. And he'll want to, I mean, it just, oh, is my child going to grow up to be a, you know, somebody dangerous? You know, it's like, so that's my fear because I see this. And I, when I heard you go, you know, you're describing your whole fall into a pile with your 12-year-old, that's where I'm kind of going, okay, can I be more, is there any teeth to my fear or is it just irrational stuff? And if I'm doing all the right things, this is just life. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of where my second question was of going, oh my gosh, he's going to be older, bigger. Oh my gosh, I need to fix this now before he's huge and can hurt me, you know?
Yeah.
Is that more, I guess it's more of a follow-up way to ask that question.
Well, the answer to that question is within you when you get listening time.
Okay.
You know, I have to take my fears to my listening partner in order to be able to sort out, you know, what's real, what, you know, and what are we, you know, like, so it was a small example. So, for example, the four paragraphs, you know, for those several days that I was doing the finding like another page that kind of taught the same thing, but you just had to circle something or fill in the blank. You know, my mind was whirling with like, okay, what therapy should we do next? Should we do vision therapy? Do we need that? Should we go that? And, you know, and like it was just whirling. And it wasn't until I got listening time that I sorted out for myself, I don't know what's going on I don't know what his eyes are seeing, but what I do know is that he's got feelings around this. And so the sorting out comes by taking that to a listening partnership. And there's, our Yahoo discussion group is a great place to find a listening partner. If you go to, I think, groups.yahoo.com and put in hand in hand discuss, the Yahoo discussion group will come up. You can join it and it's a great place to post. And this is what I recommend. I say, you know, I know sometimes people like to have people who have a partner that has the same, like our kids are the same age or, you know, we're both stay-at-home moms or whatever. I say, just put in what your availability is. The best times for me to do listening partnerships are, you know, Monday through Friday from 9 to 12 or whatever, you know, or after my kids are asleep and I'm in central time zone. And, you know, and so the Yahoo discussion group is a great place to find a listening partnership. Also, taking a starter class or the parent intensive, you have a built-in community right there of people who, you have an instructor who's listening to you and you have built-in listening partners that you can, that you connect every week so you can reach out to them throughout the week and exchange listening time. So that sorting out, that accepting of what, you know, just what do I need to do here to be the leader in my family? This is what's an unworkable situation. What's next, you know, in terms of my son, like just in terms of therapy or school or support, or, you know, all comes through me taking that to listening partnership and being able to sort through that.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
This has been very helpful.
Oh, good.
And did you say Kristen Volk?
Volk.
Volk.
V-O-L-K.
Okay.
Is in Denver. And as I said, she teaches the starter class. She also will teach a section of the parent intensive. Once school starts up again, I believe she'll offer a Wednesday evening support call. So she would be a really great resource for you because she's got that same dynamic of kids coming home from the other parent. And I think she would just, so she can be really helpful. So,
okay.
So again, I'm just going to thank everybody who's been on the call. Really appreciate all the people who hung in there, and hope that you got something out of this little extra 25 minutes or so that we did. Please do stay in touch. Let us know how it's going and how we can support you. And again, thank you, Miriam. Thank you so much for being on the call with me. Really appreciated all your insight and wisdom.
Thank you, Kathy.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great rest of your day or evening, depending on your time zone. Bye-bye.